Today on The Grave Talks, the haunted Marysville home. Dogs going mad, beds shaking, mental oppression, and strange voices heard out of nowhere. Just the tip of the iceberg when describing the haunted Marysville home that Yvonne lived in for several years. What should have been a comfortable home for her and her family turned into anything but. Was there something that the home sat on that caused her and her family such torment? Why did the entity at the haunted Marysville home attempt to mimic her family members? And just how far would this dark entity go to torment Yvonne and her family?
I have had What was that?
I didn't say anything.
Okay. I don't know how interested you are in what happened before the Marysville house, but I can tell you a little bit about the events that happened to me before that, because there were a couple that were remarkable. First is the one that I detailed in my email to you, where I talked about the fact that we lived in a house in Bethel, Connecticut when I was young. And back in those days, everybody had 5 or 6 kids. So one night in the summer, we were all playing, and we were playing hide and seek, and the home base tree was in our front yard. And the we were not it at that time, but whoever was counting was at the tree counting. And I looked at my best friend and I said, "Let's hide in my house. Nobody will be there. Nobody will come. And we'll be able to look out the bathroom window. We'll run upstairs, go to the second floor bathroom. We'll be able to see the tree from the bathroom window." And she was okay with that. So we went in the house and I turned around behind me and locked the front door. And then ran to the back door and locked that door. All of the windows in the house were closed and locked because my stepfather was an air conditioning person, and he was going to darn well make sure that we did not let that air conditioning out. And so we went upstairs to the second floor bathroom, and we're sitting there. I'm sitting over by the toilet looking out the window at the home base tree, and she's sitting on the edge of the bathroom tub. And all of a sudden, the doorknob in the bathroom started turning rapidly back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Now, we're the only two in the house. The other kids are outside. My parents were gone. And she looks at that door and she looks at me and she starts crying. And she said, "What are we going to do?" And I said, "We're going to open the door and we're going to run out of here." And she said, "You first." So I did. And when I pulled that door open, the handle was still going back and forth rapidly, but there was nobody there on the other side of that door. And we ran out of the house. That's the first time that something really major happened.
What was going through your mind at that moment when you had that occurrence, when that handle is going, you know, this is not clearly, you know, normal for anything. Right. What are you thinking at that moment?
Well, I was about 9 at the time, and already by that point in time, I had experienced enough stuff in that house, little stuff like the downstairs toilet. It did not matter how many times we replaced the ring, and my stepfather must have replaced it 5 or 6 times. That toilet would flush, and if you happened to be standing there, you could see the handle move and when it was flushing. So I don't think it was a plumbing problem. I think this was beyond that.
Yeah.
The other thing that was happening was there were shadow figures and voices in the house and lots of poltergeist type of activity, like things would go missing and you'd find them in a place that was just totally not what you would expect. So a couple of times I remember my parents' keys going missing, and, you know, a couple of months later they'd find them in the freezer, in the back of the freezer. So this was not, it was not normal activity that was going on in the house. We learned sometime after we moved into the house that the house had a history, basically. There had been a robbery of a bank in the town that we were living in, and apparently the robber took off, and when the police got to him, he had run into the house that we had bought, and they shot him, and he died there. And so we figured that might be part of what was going on in the house. It's, you know, that energy was left there or whatever.
What were some of the other occurrences that happened in that house that made you truly believe it was haunted?
Another time within the first year that we moved into the house, we had a pool in the backyard, and I happened to look up at the attic window because I could feel somebody watching me, and there was a figure in the window. On another occasion, there were just a number of things that happened there too. On another occasion, there were, my parents were away. It was just me and my older stepbrother who were at the house. I was sleeping in my parents' room, which was the only room that had a TV in it in the upstairs. And I woke up in the middle of the night because I heard a man and a woman talking, and I heard them for a couple of minutes, and then I heard them come down the hallway outside of my parents' bedroom. And that made me get up and go to my stepbrother's room, and I ended up sleeping on the beanbag chair in his room. So those are the main things from there. It was, even that amount of stuff was not as dramatic as the stuff that happened in the Marysville house and one incident in between. When I got to be about, I had to have been just turned 18 not too long before this happened, and I had just gotten married maybe 4 or 5 weeks before this happened. And I was in the military, so my husband did not know my family because I was 3,000 miles away from my family at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And he was working nights back then, and he was sleeping. He was not in the military at that point. And I came home from work, and you'll see that this incident is very similar to something that happened at the Marysville house as well. I decided that I was going to clean the bathroom, and I know it was a Monday night because I used to teach line dancing on Monday nights at the NCO club with my then husband. And the first thing I did was take my uniform off, and this was the embarrassing part. I was cleaning the bathroom in my underwear, and I knelt down and I'm cleaning the toilet, and I felt somebody watching me. So I turned my head to look, and there in the doorway of the bathroom was a figure, a white figure, about probably 6'3" tall. And my first thought was to turn away from it, and I did, and I got up at that point, and I thought, you have just smelled too much toilet bowl cleaner. And so I looked back again at the doorway, thinking that this was probably exposure to the chemicals of the toilet. And it was still there. So I walked over to it. And when I got about 8 inches from it, I reached out to touch it. And it disappeared at that point. So as soon as that happened, I started to get a really weird feeling that there was something wrong with somebody in my family. And my first thought was, well, maybe it's my husband, because he was asleep and he had worked during the night, and maybe something had happened. So I went in and I checked on him, and everything was fine. He was still sleeping, and there was still a little bit of time before he had to get up to go teach the line dancing class with me. And so I let him sleep, and the feeling is getting worse and worse while he's sleeping. Finally, I couldn't deal with the feeling anymore, so I woke him up. And by then, and over that period of time too, the sense of what had happened had developed. So by the time I woke him up, I knew that somebody in my family had been in a car accident, but I did not know who. So I woke him up, and I'm telling him the story of what happened. I'm telling him what I saw, and I'm telling him that I know somebody in my family had been in a car wreck. And he looks at me and he said, "You're nuts. It's just your imagination. Yeah, you probably had exposure to the toilet bowl cleaner, and that just, that's the whole cause for the whole thing. There is nothing going on." And in the and while he's saying this, the anxiety about it is building and building and building. And finally he says, well, I'm going to call Frank. Frank was the guy who DJed for us while we taught dancing, and find out what the music lineup will be for tonight so that I can know what dances we're going to teach. And I said, no, don't call Frank, because my mother is going to call in 10 minutes and she's going to tell us who was in the car accident. And as I was saying it, that was my first knowledge of that. So I didn't know, in other words, that she was going to call or that she was going to tell us who was in the accident until the words were coming out of my mouth. And he said, well, you're nuts. This is just, the whole thing is nuts. It's crazy. Nothing happened. Everything is fine. So he proceeds to make the call to Frank. And when he makes the call, I'm sitting there for a second watching him, and I got up because I was just churning. My whole insides were churning over this knowledge. And I walked to the door and I turned around. And as I turned around, I saw his face turn as white as a sheet, and he dropped the phone. And he said, who's Francis? And remember, he didn't know my family because we'd only been married a few weeks and I lived 3,000 miles away from my family. And I said, that's my mother. He said, the operator just broke in with an emergency call from Francis. And I said, hang up the receiver so she can put the call through. And I ran to the extension, and it was my mother calling to tell me that my sister had been in a car accident and she was in a coma. So my whole life has been sort of peppered with those kind of things. And I'll tell you more about that, the ones that happened at the Marysville house. As we go through that.
When you had this experience and you knew out of nowhere, just boom, you're speaking that, hey, my mom's going to call and tell us this information. I mean, what's going through your mind when, you know, obviously people around you are like, huh? Like, that sounds crazy. How are you feeling at that moment in time? Are you feeling like, am I crazy? Or like, what's going through your head?
Yeah, I was thinking I was a little bit crazy, but I'd had a number of smaller incidents like that where things had happened. Like when I was younger, my mother would be driving and I would be relaxing in the seat next to her, and I would sit up because I would have a sense that that something was going to happen. And I would look and I would tell her, be careful when you get up by that car because it's going to pull into our lane at the last second. If you're not careful, it's going to hit us.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of used to that, but not on that grand of a scale. And it was very weird when it happened. And in fact, I really thought I was losing it at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's understandable. So you had these experiences, you had the childhood experiences, and then after childhood, you had that experience. What led you then to the Marysville house?
Well, what happened was, unfortunately, my husband, my first husband, and I did not make it, and we got divorced, and I met my current husband, Bradley, whom I've been married to for almost 22 years now. And we decided that we were going to build a house when we got married. I was just about through school, through college, and I was going to go to law school in Columbus. So we wanted to make sure that we were in a place where I could easily have access to law school, but still be away from the city of Columbus. So we chose Marysville, and we decided we were going to build a house up there. And when we were partway through building the house, the outside walls were up, but the inside walls were not finished yet. We went up to the house, and we were there because there was a family room that was down a half flight of stairs. The house was beautiful. It was 2.5 stories, 5 levels, and just gorgeous. 5 bedrooms, 3.5 baths, just beautiful. Executive kind of house.
Yeah.
Soaring ceilings and all of that. It was gorgeous. So we went there, and we were going there to look in the half. It was split level. So there was when you walked in the main floor, off to your left was a den. And then as you went straight forward, just after the den was a half set of stairs that went up to the master suite. From there, another half flight up led to 3 bedrooms and a bathroom. But if you kept going straight past that staircase, then off to the left again was a a half flight of stairs down to the family room and another bedroom, so sort of like a mother-in-law suite. Mm-hmm. And then off to the right was a hallway to a bathroom and the kitchen and the pantry. And then straight at the end of the hallway was a big living room and a dining room. So we were going down to the family room, the part of the mother-in-law suite, because I wanted to take some measurements to see what furniture we would need for there and whether stuff that we were going to buy was going to fit. And we were standing there, and Bradley was standing at the top of the half staircase watching me take the measurements. And in the middle of it, I got that funny feeling like I'd had before when I felt somebody watching me. And I looked up, and I got an overwhelming feeling that there was something wrong with the house, paranormally wrong with the house. And I looked at Bradley, and I said, there's something wrong with this house. And he didn't say anything. So I figured he didn't know what I was talking about or what I meant, but it turns out that he did. He's actually sitting here with me. He'll probably chime in at some point about his experience there. Mm-hmm. So when he didn't respond, I thought, okay, he either doesn't know what I'm talking about or something. So I went on taking the measurements and we left. And then we moved in probably 3 months after that. The house was finished about 3 months later and we moved in. And within the first couple of weeks, I woke up one night in the middle of the night up in the master suite. And I thought to myself, this is really weird that I'm waking up like this. And I looked over to my right and there was a woman, an older woman, elderly, kind of portly woman. And she was wearing like a three-quarter length dress and like the pinafore style smock apron stuff that old women used to wear back in the day. She had gray hair up in a bun. She was a little on the rotund side. And she was standing in the doorway between my bedroom and the master bath. And I thought, okay, I must still be like half asleep or something. And I didn't think anything more of it. I laid down and went back to sleep. So this started happening. And then over the next couple of years, we started seeing things like there was we called him Peeker. He was a shadow figure and he would come up out of that, the downstairs room where I told you that I was when I first had the feeling that something was wrong with the house. And you could see him peeking around the corner. If you were sitting in the living room, you could see to that little staircase and we would see him peek around the corner there. There was also a closet right in that area, a little coat closet. Mm-hmm. And an interesting thing happened there a few years into all of this that I'll tell you about in a little bit. So we would start to see a shadow figure and nobody in the house was talking to anybody else at this point in time about what they were seeing. Cause I just thought this is a little weird, but I'm not going to say anything cause it's just weird and maybe nobody else is seeing it. Maybe I need to go see a shrink or something along that line. Until one night when I was sitting in the living room and Bradley was sitting in the chair next to me and I saw it and I said, I see you. And he said, you saw that? And I said, you saw that? And we were both surprised that the other had been seeing it. He said, yeah, I've been seeing that thing for a couple of years in this house. We just had never talked about it. So one day after that, we were standing in the master bedroom talking. And at that time, our kids were 16 and the other one would be 21 at that point. So the 16-year-old comes running, screaming down from the upstairs bathroom, and he's in nothing but a towel. And that's really unusual for a 16-year-old to be doing that. And this kid's not afraid of anything generally, but he's screaming that there's a girl in the bathroom upstairs. There's a girl in the bathroom. So we're telling him to calm down and we're saying, well, wait, tell us what you're talking about. He said, I was in the shower and I felt somebody watching me and I pulled down the shower curtain to look and there was a little girl and she was dressed in a plaid skirt and a white shirt and she had ponytails and she was staring at me, and she stared at me, and when she discovered that I was looking at her, she looked at me and she pointed her finger at me, and I got a really bad headache when that happened. And I said, well, what else did you notice? He said, I saw her reflection in the mirror and in the doorknob of the bathroom, because the door was had been open. So he said, and that made me get out and run down to here. So we're trying to calm him down. And at that point, nothing really major like that had happened to either Bradley or I. So we were not, we were thinking maybe he had a migraine, maybe that was the cause of it. We don't know. But we were a little bit dismissive of it at that time until other things started happening. So not too long after that, Bradley and I started to experience things in the house that were much more major. And I have I'm sitting right next to it right now. I have one of those kind of up and down hospital tables that I always put next to the bed so I can pull a desk over to me if I want to work on something while I'm in bed. And on that table, the only thing on it was a salt shaker, because apparently I had had a snack up there at some point in time. And it was a rounded top salt shaker that tapered down to the bottom. And it was sitting on the table, in the middle of the table, nothing else around it. And Bradley and I were standing, it was at the head of the bed in the master bedroom, and we were standing at the foot of the bed, probably 2 or 3 feet beyond that. So a pretty good distance from the table with the salt shaker on it. And we were the only two in the room, and we were just standing there talking. And I looked up because I heard a noise, and I looked at the table, and the salt shaker turned up on its edge. And it started rocking back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, 4 or 5 times until it finally fell over and rolled away. And I looked at Bradley and I said, did you see that? And he said, yep, I sure did. And it was just a really creepy incident. We had no way to dismiss that one because there was nothing around. We also, during that time, had a rubber squeaky duck. We have several dogs. Little dogs, and the rubber squeaky duck is about as big as them. If you put it on a hardwood floor, it will stand up, but if you put it on a carpet, it will not. And I noticed it one night when I was going to bed, and I already knew that it couldn't stand up on the carpet because I had been playing with the dogs and had tried to stand it up to play with them. And one night as I was going to bed, I noticed it laying on the floor on the carpet at the edge of the bed. And I went to bed and something woke me up around 2 o'clock in the morning. Again, only Bradley and I had been in the room, and he didn't have to pass by any place at the end of the bed to get to his side of the bed. So I got up and I started to go over toward the restroom, which I did have to go toward the end of the bed to go there. And I got stopped dead in my tracks because there was that rubber duck, and it was standing in the middle of the carpet looking at me, basically. It was turned toward me. I have no idea how it got there or, how it got stood up. I know the dogs couldn't have done it. They're tiny. They're 3 to 5 pound dogs.
Sure.
So, very weird thing going on there. But again, we're still like, after you live with stuff for a while, you just kind of, you acknowledge it, but you kind of get used to it in a sense. You don't ever get used to it, but you get used to it.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously have had enough experiences with paranormal activity of some sort that you know it's out there, that things happen. Are you curious at this point as to who it is or what it is or why it's there?
We did get curious after an incident that happened in May of 2009, May 24th of 2009. So while all of this has been going on, we've also been seeing things like out of the pantry, a huge black shadow shoot out of the pantry, go across the kitchen, and then shoot down the hallway where the bathroom was that I talked about earlier. And also we had begun to be suspicious that something seriously paranormal was going on. So, and the other key to this was the dogs were just going crazy when we would come home. They would be screaming at the top of their lungs to be let out of the area where they were. And it wasn't just because we came through the door, because there were other, we had them other places. They never did that. They were screaming. So one day we decided, because we had had enough experiences by then, that we were going to lay out some tape recorders to see what was happening. And the first one we did was on the kitchen counter near where the dogs were kept, so that we could try to figure out what was making them do this. And we all left, and about 20 minutes into the taping, after everybody had left, I heard, when I listened back to the recording, the doors from the top of the house, you remember this is a 2.5-story house, all the way at the back, doors slam, 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 slam through the house, getting closer and closer and closer. And there were a lot of doors in this house because it was a 3,400 square foot house. It was big.
Yeah.
And finally ending with the door to the bathroom in that hallway and the door to the pantry slamming, slamming, slamming. And you could hear as the door slamming got closer, the dogs starting to scream. They were just terrified of what was going on in that house. And so then we tried not to leave them alone as much as possible in the house. But there were times even in that particular set of times where I would come in the house. I would be the only one coming into the house, and the house would feel so heavy and dark that I would just turn around and go right back out. It was very uncomfortable in that house, especially when you were by yourself.
Yeah.
So we finally had an incident among these, and there are some other big ones that happened after this also. My husband and I were had just come back from the baby shower, my daughter-in-law's baby shower for our grandson. We were the only two people in the house, and I was sitting in my recliner, and he was sitting catty-corner from me on the couch. And we were talking about how special the day was and all of that. That's why I remember the date, because of the fact that it was the day that we had the baby shower.
Sure.
For my grandson. And we were just talking, and all of a sudden, to my left, I started to see what looked like 1,000 tiny mirrors all shimmering at the same time. And I thought, I'm not going to look at this. I've already seen so much stuff in this house. I'm not going to look. I kept looking at Bradley, and then I saw him look. So then I thought, okay, I can't let him see this alone. So I looked, and what I saw, and what he saw also, was a 7-foot-tall figure walk right out of the wall through part of the couch, and it came toward my chair from right through the couch he was sitting on from that wall, and turned to its right, and it walked within inches of my chair and into the dining room area. And the funny thing is that although it was clearly had some kind of etherealness to it that would allow it to walk through the wall in the couch, by the time it got to the bar that was the pass-through, basically, to the kitchen, it was not still ethereal like that, because one of the dining room chairs that was against the bar was pulled out a little bit. It didn't walk through it. It walked around it. And it went around the end of the bar and into the kitchen, and I could see it through the pass-through disappear in a triangle of light. And it was a very, very, it was had long robes. You want to say anything about it, Bradley? Bradley's here with me. He can tell you what his perception was, too.
Yeah, actually, about 30 seconds or so before it came out of the wall, I got the strange feeling that a young man who had used to live with us came out of his room upstairs on the third story area, and I could feel him walking along and then going down the stairs towards the master bedroom and then down the stairs towards our level. Well, as it went down that set of stairs, the feeling changed from being Josh to being Kurt, our oldest son. I thought, he's not in the house either. Neither one of them are in the house, but I got this feeling that Kurt was coming down and was going to come over to us. But instead of coming over like you normally would through, the passageway and into the living room, I could tell this thing went into the wall and through that little bathroom, she was saying, which was right behind me where I was sitting on the couch, and it came out beside me. And at that point, I knew it wasn't either one of them and that it was something paranormal. And it was, like she said, about 7 feet. The way I describe it, I could only see it from the back once it came out of that wall because it turned to the right away from me. But it looked to me like what we think a very stylized version of a Hebrew priest about the time of Jesus, the same kind of headdress and the same kind of robes and everything, but it was all very stiff. It wasn't like they were flowing robes. It was all stiff.
Hair to its shoulders.
Yeah, hairs to its shoulders. And
the facial features were not really identifiable. It was very, very similar to what I saw when I was in the military.
Yeah. And so then, of course, it walked away, and I couldn't see it at all, and she followed it. I don't normally have that kind of experience of feeling like that, that something is coming and all, but that was an intense feeling that particular time.
That house was, anybody else, I think, would have run right out of the house because it was a crazy, crazy place to live. At that point, we called in a paranormal team. And
certified by TAPS.
Yes, the TAPS paranormal team. They came in and they actually were able to see the big black shadow mask that I had mentioned. And they were down in the basement at one point in time doing some work down there because I had told them that my oldest son, when he lived in the bedroom that was down there, he would get banging on the wall from the basement. Boom, 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 on the wall behind him. And there was nothing there that should have been doing that. So they were down there looking around to try to see if they could figure out what was going on. And they heard a loud bang from upstairs. So they ran up the stairs. And you remember I told you about the little coat closet there?
Yeah.
Something had kicked that door open from the inside. And they heard it and they saw it. So they told us this. They also got a recording of a voice. They had asked the question, "Who are you?" Because the people here might like to know who it is that's in their home. They got a voice saying, "I'm Jeremy Latimer."
That wraps up part one of our interview with Yvonne about the haunted Marysville home. In part two of our interview, who is the ghost of Jeremy Latimer? Why is he haunting the house? Who else is haunting the home, such as the 7-foot-tall cloak priest? What's the entity doing mimicking the images of the living? Objects are flying around the house and landing in strange ways. And what was causing this? What did her service animal see when walking down the stairs? And was the house responsible for the death of that very service animal? We'll talk about all this and more in part two of our interview with Yvonne. If you'd like to hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. Go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and sign up. It's only $5 a month. You'll get access to part two of all of our interviews, as well as advanced episodes of the program months before they're released to the public. It's all there for you at patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to our website, thegravetalks.com, and sign up. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.